Ricky Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, John Russell brings us a new everyday grammar report. He tells us about how word position can increase clarity of a thought or sentence. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the presidency of Richard Nixon. But first, the number of monkeypox cases reported worldwide dropped by 21% in the last week. The drop marks a possible sign that the outbreak in Europe may be starting to decline, the World Health Organization, or WHO, said Thursday. The United Nations Health Agency reported 5,907 new weekly cases. It said two countries, Iran and Indonesia, reported their first cases. More than 45,000 cases have been reported in 98 countries since late April. Cases in the Americas made up 60% of infections in the past month, the WHO said. Cases in Europe, it said, made up about 38%. It said infections in the Americas showed a continuing steep rise. The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Thursday the continent had 219 new cases reported in the past week. That is a jump of 54%. Most were in Nigeria and Congo, the agency said. In early July, the WHO's Europe director said countries in the region were responsible for 90% of all laboratory-confirmed cases of monkeypox. British health officials said last week that there were early signs the country's monkeypox outbreak was slowing. Britain's Health Security Agency said last month there was no evidence the disease was spreading beyond men who were gay, bisexual, or had sex with other men. Monkeypox outbreaks in Europe and North America were identified in May. Since then, the WHO and other health agencies have noted that its spread was almost all in men who have sex with men. Monkeypox has existed in parts of Africa for many years. Experts suspect the outbreaks in Europe and North America began after the disease started spreading through sex at two parties in Spain and Belgium. WHO's latest report said 98% of cases are in men. The large majority of those cases are in men who have sex with men. The WHO has recommended that men at high risk of the disease temporarily consider reducing their number of sex partners. Monkeypox usually requires skin-to-skin or skin-to-mouth contact with infected areas on a patient's skin, called lesions, to spread. People can also become infected through contact with the clothing or bedsheets of someone who has monkeypox lesions. Monkeypox vaccines worldwide are limited. Officials in the U.S., Europe, and Britain have all begun decreasing the strength of the vaccine dose in order to stretch supplies. The WHO has advised countries that have vaccines to offer the shots to people at high risk for the disease first, including gay and bisexual men with several sex partners. They also advise vaccinating health workers and laboratory workers and others involved in controlling the outbreak. While Africa has reported the most suspected deaths from monkeypox, the continent has no vaccine supplies available to the public. The only vaccines there are being used in a research study in Congo.
Imagine you are a business owner. You hire employees and ask them to do the jobs they are best fitted for. One employee is skilled at dealing with people, so you have them interact with customers. Another employee is good with numbers, so you have them take care of records and payments. In today's everyday grammar, we will consider a situation that is in some ways like our fictional business. Except instead of an employer putting people into the right positions, we will explore one way a language learner can put words into the right positions. What is the right position? The one that provides for the clearest expression of meaning. In this report, you will learn about a common situation that can reduce the clear expression of ideas, or clarity. This situation involves using noun forms of words that would be better expressed as verbs. Let's start with sentence structure. We generally divide sentences into two parts, the subject and the predicate. For example,
the boy threw the ball.
The sentence has this structure.
Subject, verb, object.
The subject is the boy, the verb is threw, and the object is the ball. The farther the sentence gets away from the subject, verb, object order, the harder it becomes to understand. Similarly, subjects that are concrete, meaning they can act, they can do something, are better than subjects that are abstract. Abstract words or phrases cannot act. Abstractions are often a result of noun forms that would be better used as verb forms. Consider these two examples.
The man took a walk. The establishment of a better tax policy will take place after the elections.
The first sentence is much easier to understand, and not just because it is shorter. The man took a walk is much easier to understand because the subject is concrete, the man. The second sentence is much more difficult to understand because it involves an abstract subject, the establishment, as in the establishment of a better tax policy. The noun, the establishment, cannot do anything. It is an abstract noun that would be clearer if it were in verb form. How might we change the sentence so that it is clearer? Here is one possibility.
Council members will establish a better tax policy after the elections.
In our new sentence, the subject is council members. They can act. We changed the noun form, the establishment, to the verb form, establish. When a sentence seems unclear, check whether it has a noun that might work better as a verb. In other words, check to make sure that nouns and verbs are in the best place for what you want to express. In her book, The Well-Crafted Sentence, writing expert Nora Bacon provides this example of a poorly structured sentence.
An emphasis is placed
on the development of research skills in our graduate program.
Bacon suggests that the sentence would be much better if it removed the noun form an emphasis and replaced it with the verb form emphasizes, as in,
our graduate program emphasizes the development of research skills.
Let's take some time to work with these ideas. Pause the audio after hearing the example sentence. Consider how to change the sentence so that it has a clear subject.
The candidate's decision to drop out of the race happened when he fell to 8th place in a public opinion poll.
Here is one way you might change the sentence.
The candidate decided to drop out of the race when he fell to 8th place in a public opinion poll.
When we changed the noun decision to the verb decided, the sentence's subject became shorter and clearer. We began this report with a comparison to a business owner. While the comparison is not perfect, it does provide a useful way to think about sentences. The business owner wants to employ a person where his or her talents are strongest. In other words, the business owner wants the right person for the job. The same idea holds true when you are making choices about language. The reason you use a word or structure is because it is the right word or structure for the job. The next time you are reading or writing, check sentences that seem unclear. If they seem unclear, there is a good chance that they involve a noun that would be better in verb form. I'm John Russell.
Has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Richard Nixon. Nixon is well known to many Americans for one reason. He was the only president to resign from the position. Facing possible legal action by Congress, Nixon left office early in his second term. Yet Nixon's early political career was marked by success. He also had some noteworthy achievements during his White House years. And he attained his goal of moving the government in a more conservative direction. In his later years, Nixon and his supporters tried to reclaim his place as an expert on international affairs. But for many Americans, the name Nixon remains linked to distrust of national leaders, abuse of power, and political wrongdoing. Richard Nixon had a difficult early life. He was the second of five sons in a Quaker family. His parents owned a lemon ranch in California, near the city of Los Angeles. But the family struggled financially, and two of Richard's brothers died, one as a small child and one as a young adult. In time, his parents' business failed, and the Nixons moved to a nearby town. The parents and children all worked at a filling station that sold fuel and other products. Despite the many hours he worked at the store, Richard Nixon was a top student in high school. He was offered financial aid to attend Harvard University, but the family needed even more money to send him there. Instead, he attended a local college, where he became the student body president, joined a debate team, acted in the theater, and played football. Nixon went on to law school at Duke University in North Carolina. Even with his impressive background, he did not get the jobs he sought at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, or top law offices. So he returned to the California town where he grew up and began working as a lawyer. There, he married another actor at the community theater. Her name was Thelma Ryan, but she was called Pat. The Nixons went on to have two daughters, Tricia and Julie. In 1942, Nixon accepted a job with the federal government in Washington, D.C. He did not stay in the position long. After the United States entered World War II, Nixon joined the Navy. He served as an officer in the Pacific. When he returned to the U.S., Republican Party officials asked him to be a candidate for Congress. Nixon agreed. He won two terms in the House of Representatives, and then a seat in the U.S. Senate. 2 years later, Dwight Eisenhower, the Republican presidential candidate, asked Nixon to be his vice president. The two men won in an electoral landslide, and in 1953, Nixon took office as vice president. He was only 40 years old, the second youngest vice president in U.S. history. Nixon's early political career is remembered for several reasons. One is how quickly he rose to high government office. Another is for his part in the Alger Hiss case in the late 1940s. Hiss was a top official in the State Department. He was accused of being a communist in the 1930s and 1940s, and of passing information about the U.S. government to Soviet spies. Hiss denied the accusations. The case was big news in the United States. It showed the clash between people who believed Hiss was falsely accused as a way to discredit liberal policies and people who believed the government was protecting communist sympathizers. Nixon was in the second group. He was part of the investigation against Hiss and pushed for his indictment. Nixon's efforts succeeded, and Hiss went to jail for almost 4 years. Later, Nixon said that the case was one of the reasons for his rise to power. Nixon also earned national attention with an event that has become known as the Checkers Speech. It happened in 1952, when Nixon was running for vice president. Some reporters accused Nixon of corruption. They said he was accepting money and gifts from wealthy donors in exchange for his political support. Nixon went on television to deny the claims personally. At the time, Americans were not used to seeing politicians speaking directly to the public. Yet Nixon spoke informally and emotionally from what appeared to be a home. He explained his family's finances. He said he did not accept campaign donations for personal benefit. But he added there was one exception. A supporter had once given the Nixon children a black and white dog they called Checkers. Nixon said he refused to return his daughter's pet. The public and Republican Party officials loved the speech. Nixon appeared warm and likable. Middle-class Americans especially said they could relate to him. Most forgot the claims against him, and Nixon's political career was saved. During the following 8 years, he served as vice president in the Eisenhower administration. But then, Nixon's luck turned. In 1960, Nixon lost as a presidential candidate to John F. Kennedy. He blamed, in part, the media. Then in 1962, he lost his efforts to be governor of California. Nixon said he was retiring from politics. He famously told reporters, "You won't have Nixon to kick around anymore." Yet, 7 years later, he was in the White House. It was one of the most memorable comebacks in U.S. political history. When Nixon took office in 1969, some Americans thought the country was in crisis. The economy was not doing well. Race riots had been erupting in big cities. Many people were still trying to recover from the violence of a year earlier. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. and President John F. Kennedy's brother Robert had both been shot and killed. Pollution of the environment was becoming a major political issue, women were pressing for equal rights, and many Americans continued to protest American involvement in Vietnam. Nixon took action. During his first years in office, he supported reforms and rules to improve the economy, protect the environment, increase workplace and other opportunities for women, support civil rights, and, in his words, bring peace with honor in Vietnam. But for the most part, Nixon did not have the support of Congress to enact legislation. So he expanded the power of the presidency to carry out his goals. He is remembered especially for three foreign policy moves. In 1972, he visited China, with which the U.S. government had tense relations since the Chinese Communist Party took power. As the Alger Hiss case showed, Nixon was strongly anti-communist, but he made establishing diplomatic relations between the two sides possible again. He also visited the Soviet Union and was the first U.S. president to visit Moscow. Nixon and the Soviet leader, Leonid Brezhnev, agreed to limit the growth of nuclear arms. Their actions helped ease tensions at a time when U.S. officials were worried about the expansion of communism. And Nixon did succeed in reaching a peace agreement with North Vietnamese leaders. In 1973, American troops slowly began to leave the country, although fighting there continued. Nixon's foreign policy achievements helped him in the 1972 election campaign. His first presidential election had been extremely close. The second he won by one of the widest electoral vote margins in U.S. history. Even though he was popular with voters, Nixon had been concerned about his political future. Nixon was so worried that, before the election, he created a secret team to prevent any damaging information from reaching the media. Later, its job expanded to include investigating any information that might hurt his public image. About 5 months before Election Day, five men broke into the opposition party's headquarters at the Watergate, a hotel and office complex in Washington, D.C. The team had already stolen copies of secret campaign documents. Now, in the middle of the night, the men were trying to add listening equipment to the telephones. In other words, spy on the opposition. But a security guard became suspicious and called the police. The men were caught and arrested. When the story came to light, Nixon publicly denied that any White House officials were involved in the crime. But in time, the public learned that Nixon was lying. In fact, he assisted with payments to the men who were arrested. And he tried to use the Central Intelligence Agency to block an FBI investigation of the crime. Nixon knew that the Watergate break-in was only part of the illegal or questionable acts he could be held responsible for. Later, people connected with Nixon told investigators that the president had taped everything that happened in his office. Investigators demanded the tapes. They would prove how much Nixon knew about the illegal operations. The president refused. He dismissed the lead investigator. Two other Justice Department officials resigned in protest. A new investigator was appointed. And the U.S. Supreme Court ordered Nixon to release the tapes. At the same time, the House of Representatives voted to remove Nixon from office. They charged him with obstructing justice, abusing his power, covering up a crime, and violating the Constitution. Finally, Nixon released the tapes. But before the Senate could hold a trial, in which the president would almost certainly be found guilty, Richard Nixon resigned. He left the White House the following day. Nixon lived for 20 more years. He wrote a number of books, traveled, spent time with his family, and offered foreign policy advice to other leaders. He continued to deny that he had done anything criminal as president. Instead, Nixon said he had made bad decisions. And he did not go to trial. The next president, Gerald Ford, used his power to pardon Nixon for all offenses against the United States. But Nixon's image was permanently damaged. Most people found evidence in the tapes that Nixon knew about a related series of crimes, commonly known as Watergate. They also found that some of his public statements were dishonest. They said he made them to forward his own political goals, not to further the public good. As a result, Nixon's place in U.S. history is generally thought to be a troubled one. To be sure, he made a number of positive accomplishments, both within the U.S. and internationally. But his presidency left the country shaken. When Ford replaced him as president, he said to Americans, "Our long national nightmare is over." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today.
Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.